Chapter 9. The ships moved slowly in a great, waving gray and black line from east to west, like a ribbon of steel and adamantium slicing the sky. So many. I had never seen so many ships in one place, even on ceremonial days on my family's homeworld. What I could not understand was the reason so many were necessary, if in fact they were here to capture and incarcerate just one old warrior servant. Even a Promethean, it seemed to me, did not merit such a show of force. But everyone around me seemed to think I was a fool, even a simpleton. I kept to the inner beach, lying on the sand, watching the ships arrange themselves in tight whirls, spiraling in toward Jermonkin Crater. At the center of the whirl, a great builder ship, the largest I had ever seen, and a great miner vessel, easily outmatching anything owned by my Swap family, held steady in a dyadic cloud of buffer energies. The air itself began to feel stiff and harsh with the pressure of so many ships hanging in slow suspension. A shadow of a nearer, darker sort crossed my face, and I angled my head to see a war sphinx just a few meters away, rising on its curved legs. "The Didact requests your presence," it announced. "Why?" I asked. "The entire galaxy is coming to a bitter end. I'm just a piece of waste matter not worth flushing." The Sphinx took a step closer, unfolding upper arms tipped with tangles of flexible grapples. Hard light flashed blue along all its joints. "So it's not a request, huh?" I said, and pushed to my feet. "Do I walk, or are you offering me a ride?" "Suck it up, Manipular," the Sphinx intoned. "Your presence will be useful." I felt for the first time that there might be more than just a mechanical intelligence under its pitted skin. "He wants me to witness him being arrested," I said. "Is that it?" The grapples flashed like the agile fingers of a Pan-Gut master. "These ships are not here to arrest the Didact," the Sphinx informed me. "They are here to demand his help. He will, of course, refuse." I had no response to this. Instead, I followed the Sphinx quietly through the trees to the inner shore. Since the Sphinx seemed to have found a new purpose, telling me what was what, I ventured another question. "What's with the mountain? Why tear it down?" "It is the librarian's doing." "Oh." That told me nothing, of course, but it was intriguing. Something big was happening, that much was obvious. Without my armor, I wasn't fit to meet my superiors, or even other Manipulars, for that matter. But the fact that the Didact still knew I existed, and required my presence, was also intriguing. I looked around the inner shore. Then a glint caught my eye, and I looked up toward the base of the mountain, the cloud-piercing pillars, and saw the other war sphinxes flying across the inner lake, climbing rapidly to several hundred meters. I looked around. The inner beach was deserted. "Where is everybody?" I asked. The Sphinx's control cabin hatch pulled aside with a fluid sigh. "You will join the Didact. Get in." I knew enough about the protocol of warriors and their machines to understand that I was not being recruited into a glorious, defiant fight to the finish. And then it dawned on me, the humans might be riding in sphinxes as well. Why were we so important? I tried to crawl up the pitted ancient surface, the grapples extended around and aft, providing stirrups. I climbed in through the rear hatch and it sealed behind me. The cabin inside was spacious enough for a mature warrior servant, only slightly smaller than the Didact himself, giving me plenty of room, but no comfort, because nothing was shaped to accommodate a much smaller and almost completely naked Manipular. There were a bare seat, a variety of antiquated displays, and control tubes designed to hook up with armor. Standing on the seat, I could see through the slanted, forward-looking direct-view ports that gave the Sphinx's features the illusion of a disdainful downward gaze. I felt only a little bump, and then we were away, wheeling about to join the general migration toward the dismantled mountain and the mysterious pillars. Above the island, the spiral of ships held position and did nothing, perhaps locked in some sort of dispute. Wherever the Didact was, there was likely to be trouble. I could not imagine the power he had once wielded, that he could still, after 1,000 years, provoke legions of forerunners to seek him out and assemble their ships above the island. We crossed the inner lake in minutes, a leisurely pace for craft designed to drop from high orbit, sweep continents, and decimate cities. The only thing these old machines lacked, I thought, was a direct connection to slipspace. But I didn't know that for sure. The Sphinxes circled the lower reaches of the pillars, then passed between and dropped to a central octagonal platform. There, they settled in a protective ellipse, just as I had first seen them only a few days before. The hatch opened. I emerged and slid off the rear curve. From another Sphinx, Riser poked out, clearly agitated. Not tall enough to see out the ports, I thought. The Florian ran over and stood close, wringing his hands and trembling.
"Something in there with me,"
he muttered, then smirked up at me and wiped his forehead with one hand.
"Not alive. Not happy. Very bad."
The greater doubled War Sphinx arrived last and settled in the center of the ellipse. As if at its touch, the platform vibrated under my feet, then began to rotate. All around, the pillars and the base of the mountain and the ships in formation high above also seemed to turn. The spiral of ships took on a hypnotic, whirlpool fascination. We felt none of this motion, but still, Riser grunted in dismay. The Didact descended from the doubled Sphinx and walked on his trunk-like legs to confront us.
"You're being kidnapped, young Manipular,"
he grumbled as the pillars sped up.
"The humans have to come as well. Apologies to all."
I looked down to avoid getting dizzy, even without the sensation of spinning. "Why apologize now?" I asked. The Didact's expression did not change. He did not react in the least to my insubordination, whelp that I was, agitating against the Prometheans' thousands of years of life and experience. He simply looked outward, drew his brows down in concentration, and asked,
"Where's the other human?"
"Still hiding," Riser said. "Sick."
Shakas chose this moment to poke his upper body out of the hatch of his transport. He looked woozy. His descent down the sloping back of the machine lacked any dignity, and he landed on bent legs, then slumped to one side and vomited.
"Bad sky,"
Riser said stoically. The Promethean regarded this sign of human weakness with the same emotion he had shown to my insubordination.
"In a few hours, all signs of my stay here will be erased. No one will be able to prove I was ever here."
"Can't the ships see us?"
"Not yet, but they obviously know something."
"Why so many?" I asked.
"They've come to ask my help, or arrest me again. I think the former, and I think I know why. But I must not help them. I've stayed here too long already. It's time to leave. And all of you will come with me."
"Where? How?" My answer arrived even as I spoke. The platform was still rising. The circling pillars sprouted bulkheads, beams, and stanchions, all the necessary parts. The skeleton of a slipspace voyager was growing around us, almost too rapidly to track, until the pillars were walled in, the sky and the swirling ships vanished, and we were completely enclosed. Shakas stumbled over to stand on my other side. Clearly he might throw up again. A disgusting practice, and to little purpose, I thought. I was flanked by humans, with the Didact before me, his back turned and arms extended, as if commanding the Voyager to rise and grow by the very gesture of his hands, which might have been the case. They might notice
that, I suggested.
From where they are, they see only a solid island and the water of the lake,
the Didax said.
The ship will grow and launch, and then they will know. The librarian designs beyond her station. She has always planned well.
She made this for you? I asked.
For our greater cause,
the Didact said.
We fight for the grace of the mantle.
The Didact turned to face me as our chamber finished, and I saw we were within a large, fully equipped command center. My father himself could not have designed a more advanced ship. I could easily imagine the outer hull, a gray, gleaming, elongated ovoid at least 1,000 meters in length. The power and the expense had to be enormous. But, cleverly enough, rather than hiding a finished ship, the librarian must have left a builder's design seed under the central peak, updating it as new technology was revealed. Forerunner technology still grew in spurts, even after millions of years. She must have traded great favors for such an installation. Displays flashed into action around the command center and showed views in many frequencies and aspects of the outer island, the distant walls of the crater, and above, I saw as I craned my neck back, the assembled searching ships. A single bright star gleamed just outside the circle of vessels at the center of the fleet spiral. That star marked our voyager's calculated point of departure. In early slip space, we did not want to pass through anything as massive as another ship. We lifted from the island. The command center displays revealed our motion. We felt nothing. At this point, the ships must see us, I thought. Such a large vessel must leave a definite trail. I felt that brief sensation of unencumbering, of all history and memory being cut loose and then painstakingly reassembled, as every particle of our ship and our bodies was wrenched from the doubled hand of time and had to find new scalars, new destinies, far, far away.
Aye,
the Promethean said.
We are away. It is done.
The displays tracked our course. We were moving outward along the great spiral arm that held both the Orion complex and Erde Tyrene, just a few tens of thousands of light years. Hours, at most, would pass for us. Had I known where we were fleeing and what we would find? Against the greatest and most solemn instructions of the mantle, I might have killed myself then and there.